For those listening, as a note, the beginning of the show sounds a little weird, as Ken's microphone was muted, so it does feel a bit out of order. We did our best to keep the dead air down, but keep the conversation going. Adam Powers has had his mark on the industry for a long time now. Whether it's been finding bands, performing in one, managing the Captain Pabst Tap Room, and selling all of the heritage brands in the Pabst portfolio, he's done it all. Adam sat down with us to chat about his time in the industries, including what he feels Pabst's next moves are. We discuss the distribution strategy of brands like Old Style and Natty Bow. He gives us a history of Stroh's, including its recent brewing at Brew Detroit and more recent entrance back into the community. And we talk about the 1844 beer pack that Pabst had for sale. This show is sponsored by Zatuna Liquor in Rochester Hills, North Center Brewing in Northville, Michigan, and the upcoming Burning Foot Beer Festival, with tickets still on sale today.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
So for this one, I have a Coconut Brown by Black Rocks Brewing out of Marquette, Michigan. But since I only had one coffee today, I also have a hard coffee by Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Great minds must think alike, because I too am drinking a PBR hard coffee, minus the salted caramel. Oh. And I'm washing it down with a tall boy of the PBR. So
yeah, awesome, guys. Thanks for having me. Adam Powers, I'm the brand manager for the Heritage Brands, which which include Old Style, Stroh's, and Stag. Those are the three brands I'm on. And I'm drinking, since I'm in the state of Texas, since that's where our headquarters is, a Lone Star Long Neck, Lone Star Light, actually, because a lot of people don't know about Lone Star Light. And then, of course, have the backup of the Tall Boy PBR. I was trying to get a Stroh's down here, but could not get it down here in time for the episode. Yeah, definitely. I mean, this brand goes back, decades and decades, with Bernard Stroh. But I would go back to like 2016. Pabst did do a rebrand of the product, and we actually went back to a logo that they were using that was, it was in the 1960s and 70s. And that's that like script looking logo. And the line is on top. So we went back to that in 2016. And if people remember the can, it was, that's it. So, and we went back to this like yellow, it's not even open. That's awesome, man. That's great. So we went back to that can in 2016, and that lasted 16, 17, 18. And then in 2019, we ended up going to this blue, like not retro can, but I cleaned it up and actually try to premiumize the brand a little bit more. We kind of felt the people on the internet saying, they didn't like it, whatnot, but it is what it is. So I took over the brand and about a year ago. Looking at a bunch of things that are happening in the world and whatnot, and it's like, what about just going back to a throwback? So this year, as of last month, we went back to the 1987 packaging, which is the family crest, and it does have the date of not when he actually started brewing, but the date when he actually likes back in his home country, he started brewing. So it's more like a basically a pay homage to, when they started brewing, the Stroh family in 1775. I do get a lot of questions like, he actually started brewing, in Detroit, way later than that. But, it's like, we kind of wanted to pay homage to, the whole family and what Stroh's is. So that's kind of what's happened over since 2016. We did brew in Detroit for a small bit of time, but that was the Bohemian Lager. So that was the only beers that was coming out of Brew Detroit. The Stroh's, the regular Stroh's, is still brewed, contract brewed through Miller. So that's kind of what happened in the last probably say 8 to 10 years there.
So for those of you listening to the podcast as well as listening live, you may have realized I was on mute. because I'm very, very good at this, trying to manage the mute button on Streamlabs, the mute button on Zoom, and the mute button on my microphone. Thank you so much to our webmaster, Bill Carney, who mentioned it in the chat. So I will kind of go over real quick. I'm drinking PBR, and I will have to do some post audio editing for sure. But the question that Adam answered, which is what I kind of asked them, which was to give me a rundown of the last kind of decade or so of Pabst Brewing and its beer Stroh's and how it was being brewed by Stroh's, brewed by Pabst, brewed by Brew Detroit, and then back to Stroh's itself. Now that everybody is caught up, I guess my next question, and maybe this might be a little bit more in your wheelhouse too, with the large distribution footprint that Pabst does have, why are certain beers like Old Style, Natty Bow, not necessarily distributed across the entire country?
That's a good question. I mean, we have 90 some brands in our portfolio, technically, that we actually own, but probably only 30-ish are active, you know? So, you know, we got to look at like, hey, what's the demand for these products and where's the demand at? That's really what it comes down to, you know. We do have some cases where, you know, you can get Lone Star all the way up in, you know, Chicago, but it's very, very limited cases, you know. But when it comes to like Natty Bow, that brand, it's very small. People don't understand how small that, it's like only 300,000 cases a year. So it's basically just kept in Baltimore. Don't really get outside of that area. It's just hard to make, you know, enough beer to actually kind of like supply all that. And it comes down to demand, really. I mean, that's the simple answer for all these brands, you know. And you look at like Old Milwaukee beyond that as well. And that's a nationwide beer. People don't even really know that we own that. And even Colt 45, we actually own that as well. So, but when it comes to regional, it's really just like keeping them at their home base, you know, giving the love there and putting in some, you know, marketing dollars and whatnot into the hometown area or maybe home spiritual area, like Old Style. Since that everyone thinks it's a Chicago brand, but it is actually a Wisconsin beer.
That's going to be something I learned just now is that it's not a Chicago beer. Tito, take it away.
Yeah, one quick question, you know, with the size of what Pabst is, and since we're currently in what they quote unquote call an endemic, what has changed with Pabst since the start of the pandemic?
Well, I think if you look at what Pabst as a company was doing in 2019, we had, you know, the whiskey, we had the seltzers, we had the coffee, we had every innovation thing we could possibly throw at the dartboard, you know, out. We had the Innovation Brewery in Wisconsin that were putting out, you know, craft beer they can only get in the tap room itself. So I think once, you know, we kind of like did that whole trial and error type thing, it was like, okay, what stuck and what didn't? And how do we kind of like go back to like square one? You know, we're a beer company. We're not a seltzer company. We're not a coffee company. We've been a beer company for a very long time. So I think you can see we have some new leadership that came in and we're kind of getting back to basics now. I think a lot of companies are like, hey, it's like, you know, how long is the seltzer craze going to last? How long is the RTD thing going to kick off or does it kick off or whatnot, you know? So I think for us, it's just get back to basics. And that's why, like, you can see the Stroh's coming back. Like, hey, it's a beautiful beer. Let's go back to a retro can, throw it back. And the love we've gotten in Detroit so far has been awesome. We also brought it back for the first time in two decades on draft, you know, and people are really digging it and to see it, you know, tap in on their local area. I mean, I run all the Instagram handles and it's fun to see people just love the product. They're so stoked that it's back to the original or not really original logo, but back to, you know, something they recognize.
You know, you kind of nailed my next question. I was going to ask you was about seltzers and RTDs, you know, yeah. But since you've already commented on that and basically planted your flag on that particular subject, I'll pass it on over to Wendy.
Well, I have one thing to talk about.
Oh, go right ahead.
The seltzers and RTDs, because living in Texas, there's, you know, when I got here, you know, everyone's kept talking about ranch waters. And I was like, what is ranch water? It sounds like, being from the Midwest, it's like you're putting ranch dressing in water. Like, well, I'm not sure what's happening, you know? So I was like, what is this? And then all these bars had it. And then all of a sudden I started seeing it in cans. And I'm just like, it's unreal how fast that has gone across the country, that brand. Yeah. and all the different flavors of it or whatever. My only thing about when it comes to, like, you know, I used to run a bar in Chicago. And like, if you think about it, it's like, okay, you want to sell, you know, a ranch water, you know, let's say it's actually, actually tequila in it, you know, it's like, are you making actually more money off of that product? Or would you rather just make the cocktail right in front of you? Because I would think that you could probably make more money off of, you know, pouring the drink in a 2 ounce pour opposed to having those cans, but it's also about speed too. You know, if you're just chucking out cans the whole time. So that's the only thing when it comes to, like, you know, when bars are like loading up on all these RTDs, it's like, isn't that what the bartender's supposed to be like doing, like interacting with the customer and all that stuff? But I feel like we're getting away from that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the, like, you know, part of the question, I think the pandemic may be part of that too, but yes, hopefully, as you know, as we, things are opening up a lot more they are now, that we can get back to more of that interaction, especially with the bartender and things like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah, cool. All right, Wendy.
So I'm drinking the PBR, the hard coffee, salted caramel. Does that mean that you guys aren't going to make more flavors of those?
I don't know what the plan is for that. I know it's still kicking around. You know, I think it did really well. You know, it was kind of like the Not Your Father's Root Beer craze that we had. You know, it really smoked. You know, I think it's finally leveled out. You know, there's a lot of other brands coming in. And grabbing up, you know, any coffee brands trying to do stuff with, you know, whatever they can do. It's crazy the collaboration that you see out there. You know, you got Monster coming in, the liquid or the alcohol, you know, stuff as well. And you have all these places, all these different brands just trying to get a little piece of, you know, the alcohol business, which is pretty unreal. Like every day something new comes out. So I actually don't know what the plan is for the coffee. It's delicious. It is
delicious.
Yes, very delicious. I love it. I mean, when I was in Wisconsin, when I was running the tap room up there, we always had it on tap, or not tap, but we always had it around.
Yeah. I don't know that I would like drink the whole 4-pack, but I could definitely see bringing it with me for camping in the morning. That would be awesome. Yeah. Or even just regular vacation, whatever. Yeah. But tell me more about the innovation.
The tap room?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So was it 2016 is when we opened up the, is it 2016? Yeah. No, I'm sorry. 2017, we opened up a small innovation brewery in Wisconsin. It's on the old Pabst ground. The owner, Eugene Casper, really wanted to bring brewing back to the area. And we renovated this church, beautiful, church built in 1872. And it was awesome. You know, we were doing pretty good here. Like, it was like downstairs, like two levels. You had downstairs the brew house, which is 10 barrel brew house. We had Jack and Zach, who the brewers were there, making some great beers, actually going back and throwing back to some old beers that Pabst did in the past. And then the second level was a concert hall, not restaurant, but it had, you know, like cheese curds and your brats and stuff like that in the tap room. It was a beautiful space. And, you know, we all know what happened. And, you know, COVID hit and we're sitting around twiddling our thumbs. We're like, what do we do with this space? And the biggest thing is, like, we didn't want to close it, you know, but it ended up just coming down to, like, hey, you know, how long are we going to hold on? How long is this going to last, really? So we ended up shutting the doors in December of 2019. And I was like, oh man, I'm out of a job. What am I going to do? You know, but I ended up jumping on the Lone Star brand team. That's why I moved down to Texas. And I was on that brand for a year and then took over the Heritage brands just the past year.
One of the major brews the Pilot House had was your old Tankard Ale and ESB. Yep. Why do you think this beer was your number two selling beer? And how come the rest of the country doesn't really understand why ESB is such a great style?
It's funny. I don't really consider it an ESB. I don't think it's that bitter. Like, I think some people do, but it's got more of a caramel malty kind of vibe for me, but it was a good selling beer. We launched that nationwide. It didn't really hit what we wanted to do. So we pulled back and we actually discontinued the SKU. But then we kept brewing it in the tap room. We brewed it once a year. It was like the McRib of McDonald's, you know. It's like we brewed it once and put it out there once, you know, and people would come get it. But the funny thing is that was not our second best selling beer in the tap room. Any guesses of what the best selling second one was?
No.
No idea.
So there's a brand called Ondecker. It's actually spelled Ann Decker, but it's an old brand that Pabst had, and it was like the Bud Select, like the cream of the crop of beer. And I tell you what, as soon as we launched that thing, people just loved it. And like we had people coming in, and we didn't package it. It was only in, you can take crawlers home. We had this guy from Michigan. He'd come every week, not every week, like once a month, fill up his cooler with crawlers, take them back, come back again, do the same thing. And that almost beat PBR out a couple times in the tap room. And I was like, wow. So I always said we had a rocket ship there, you know, and maybe someday we bring that beer back out, but it'll probably be kept pretty close to probably just Milwaukee at first, or maybe just Wisconsin.
Do you think we'll see a rebrand or a reopening of the Pilot House in the future?
I don't think it's in the cards. I think it's going to focus on just doing what we do best is, you know, selling beer and just getting back to basics. It was an awesome thing. It, like personally, it was my favorite gig at Pabst. I was the general manager there, and to touch, you know, history and innovation and see the looks on people's faces when they walk through those doors was unreal. It was crazy. It's just like everyone had a story, you know. It's like my dad worked at Pabst, or you know, my dad, his first beer my dad gave me, or whatever it is, you know. And we're starting to like really turn the corner there right before the pandemic hit, and sad to see it go, but I don't think it's in the cards. But I guess you can never say never, right? So
right. So let's go back to that history a little bit. You did have Brew Detroit brew the Bohemian Lager for a little while. And I think a lot of people didn't really differentiate between Stroh's and the Bohemian Lager. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about that, what that decision was and how that went?
Well, basically it was like, let's brew back in Detroit. And how do we do that efficiently? You know, we can't go through our contract brew to actually add a new SKU or add a new beer. It's just very lengthy, very hard. So it's like, how do we do this? We had to come up with an idea of like, hey, who's a local partner that we can partner with that can brew this beer, put it in kegs and bottles or whatever packaging we need to. And Brew Detroit was the ones that kind of like stuck out to us, and they did a great job. I remember that launch. I wasn't on the team when it happened. I remember it, like great beer. I think the city embraced it, you know. It was sad to see that beer kind of go, but I mean, I think Stroh's has had this up and down last decade of like, you know, I was like, we got this thing going and it's down. We got this thing going, it's down, you know? So now it's just like, hey, let's just get back to basics. We're going to focus on just the lager and kind of go from there. And there is a Stroh's Light people don't know about, but there's a Stroh's Light rolling around. And that went back to the retro packaging, but it was basically to bring back a brand back to the city, you know, and show that like, hey, we care. And it just didn't quite work out as what we thought it was going to. And then now it's just, hey, let's be the Detroit classic beer again.
So we talk about it on the show a lot that Michigan beer drinkers are really finicky, and we want it until we can get it, and then we don't want it anymore.
That's good to know.
So I totally understand that, where it might not have worked out the way we wanted, but it worked out really awesome at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and we see the buzz right now of putting it on draft again, you know, not the Bohemian, but the Stroh's. Like we see it, you know, it's crazy. Like the everyone wants it, but you're right. It did slow down. You know, it's like, as you like start launching, it's like, well, I thought we had all these handles, and it's like, well, we have them, but they're not moving as fast as we thought, you know? But yeah, it's great to kind of like put another like stamp on this brand, and we're not brewed there, but like we're just going back to the Detroit classic kind of look.
That's still awesome. So there's a lot of styles that fall under the Pabst brand that are typically referred to as a lawnmower beer. What is your lawnmower beer of choice?
Well, I don't have any grass here in Texas because you can't grow any. it has been I'm not joking. It has been 100 degrees the last 4 months. And I'm a Midwest guy. And I'm just like, where'd I move? You know? But lawnmower beer. I mean, it's you know what a beer that I actually enjoy that's in our portfolio that people don't know about is Old Milwaukee Light. It's a good tasting beer, and you can drink those things all day.
That was my grandfather's boyfriend's favorite beer.
Awesome.
Ken?
Yeah. So we dug up some dirt on you.
Great.
We got your high school transcripts, college transcripts. Learned a lot about you and how well you or not well you did in chemistry. No, I'm just kidding.
I was a awful student. What are you talking about?
You have a huge history in the music business. How did you find yourself in the beer business?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I talked to my parents about this, and they're just like, I graduated college with a business degree. And 2 days after I graduated, I joined a band and toured the country for my first, like in my 20s until I still play in a band. But so basically what happened is like, you know, my mom was always into like music. I started playing in high school, started playing in college, really fell in love with just like the industry, started playing in bands. And then this band called Red Metric, I got picked up to tour with them out of Virginia Beach area. And so I started playing bass for those guys. And then long story short, we broke up, moved to Chicago. And I told myself I was never going to play in a band because it was like, it's pretty stressful. Like when you start like just traveling in a van, a trailer, and it's just like, man, it's just a lot. And then I started this band, a friend called Fire with my good friend, John Allegretto. And I was always just trying to get back in the industry, you know, really wanted to work for Live Nation House of Blues. Ended up going back to grad school and got my grad degree in entertainment business. Worked at House of Blues, Live Nation for about 6 years. And then I was like a contract employee. So we ended up like whatever the program I was on, they ended up cutting the program. And there was this small venue called the Elbow Room in Chicago. It's like holds like 200 people. And I was like booking shows there on the side, just kind of like helping them out. And the guy who is the talent buyer like left. And he's like, hey man, like I'm leaving. And there's only one other person that I think can take this over this and it's you. And I was like, really? And I was like, okay. I was like, well, I just got kind of fired. So this actually works perfect. Cause I know where my next paycheck was coming from. So then I started working at this small venue called the Elbow Room. And I booked every band. It was like seven nights a week of music, 3 to 4 bands a night. It was a lot of fun, but like so many emails, a little stressful. But I knew the PBR guys from doing like sponsorships and stuff like that. And we came really close and found out the Chicago rep was actually leaving the company. And they're like, hey, like, would you apply? And I was like, well, I don't know what the gig is. He's like, dude, you're basically doing it at this club. I'm like, all you have to do is like the same thing. You just have to do it at different places. It's like, well, I can do that, you know? So it's kind of like fell right into there. And I mean, the rest is kind of history. You know, ran Chicago for a couple of years, then I ran 8 states for PAPS for field marketing. And then with my background in music and running like a venue, they're looking for somebody to run the pilot house in Milwaukee. You know, like, you want to do it? And I was like, sure. And I was like, day one, there's like, gave me the keys and there's like, all right, here you go. And I was like, okay, let's go. I did that for 3 years. And like I was saying earlier, it's like definitely my favorite job, like at PAPS is like running that place. Cause it was like my little baby. I can kind of like mold it into what I wanted to do. We had some great beers coming out of there. A lot of them never even saw like the light of day. Like we were doing sours. We had this Mexican lager that was awesome. We had stouts, we had gozes. There's this one beer, tastes like a Tootsie Roll, but it's called the Name Day. And we brewed it for like our anniversary. And it tastes like, we're trying to like, instead of do like a cake, we're like, hey, let's do a beer that's like a cake. So we came up with this like chocolate ale and it wasn't very thick, but it was so good. And we had people like every year we brewed it, people would come back and like try to grab it up, fly in or whatnot. So it's sad, but we were getting to that point of really like turning the corner of getting people to know that Pabst is doing some innovation stuff outside of, you know, the beers we have. And it was really fun too, you know, and people kind of started resonating that. And then also like being able to brew some smaller brands, or not smaller brands, but old brands that we had, like Red, White, and Blue, On Decker. We have Schlitz Erlanger we brewed at the end of the stint there. So there was a lot of beers we try to bring back just because we could, you know. It's pretty fun.
Talking about the Pilot House, you know, you kind of mentioned that it's not really in the cards anymore. Is there another Pabst tap room out there or a satellite house that they own at all?
No, we don't own anything currently. I would say like your best bet is, I got really close with the people at the Best Place, which is on the old Pabst grounds. They have a tap room. They do, it's all our products, but it's actually Pabst's old like headquarters, like way back, like in like 1800s, you know. But yeah, it's a pretty cool spot. They do like a brewery tours, but there's not a brewery there. They just do like a kind of a walking tour, like around the grounds. It's a cool spot.
Now, obviously a lot of the fans of Better on Draft are more geared towards craft beer fans. People that are looking for the independent, small owned, hazy IPA, West Coast IPA, you know, these different styles of beer, which don't really fall within the category of what Pabst is doing right now. Where do you guys see yourselves competing? Like, who are your biggest competitors? Are you looking into creating more, a more diverse portfolio in the future? Like, what's kind of your platform for the upcoming 5 years with regards to who you're competing against and what you're looking to do?
So you're saying everyone on this podcast, they all jumped off now? It's just to like, hey, here's PBR. Like,
well, honestly, we talk to so many brewers, we talk to so many people, and PBR gets mentioned probably 2 to 3 times a month.
And so, sorry to cut you off, but
oh, you're fine.
Yeah. So like, that's exactly where we play. Like, everyone asks, like, where does PBR? Like, we always say we complement the craft. So if you talk to a lot of brewers, like, they call, I'm not going to say it, but they call us a name of a beer, but after they go through a whole brew day, you know what they drink? PBR. Because they're going to sit there, drink it all day. There's a bunch of people in Chicago that do it all the time. So it's just like, it's the complement your craft. We fit in there when you're not drinking your hazy or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, we're just kind of fitting there. We're just like, hey, I still want to drink, but I don't need something that's going to fill me up or something that's high gravity, you know, like, let me just ease back here. So I think that's where a lot of our brands kind of like focus in, but I think PBR fits in better than most of our brands. It just has that like the camaraderie, I feel, you know.
That's PBR specific, but you guys aren't really harnessing just PBR, Old Milwaukee, Natty. Like, you've got, as Tito has, your cold brew coffee flavored beer. There's a Natty Bro Shandy. There's a old style Oktoberfest. Like, there are alternative styles of the brand. Mm-hmm. Are you, like, where do those play in? Are those just kind of like local fun stuff that you can go get, because, you know, over at Binny's in Chicago or whatever, it sells beer at Baltimore, not on Sundays.
Yeah, that's a weird area. Like, give me a beer. No, not today. I'm like, okay, so I can go to a bar and drink a beer? Like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. No, I would say like a lot of those brands, those extensions have been discontinued. Like, there's no Oktoberfest, there's no Shanty anymore. So like I said before, it's just really getting back to the basics. Like, I think we'll have some other things come down the pipeline later. You know, it was just, I think it's like with our constraints from being like a virtual brewer, like, since we don't have our own breweries, it's really hard to like go to market on something that we have not much control over. And also, when we brew it, we have to brew a lot of it, you know? So we can't just be like, that's why the Brew Detroit thing came in effect. It's like, hey, we can go to this local place and we only have to do, you know, 20 barrels, and then when it's gone, you know, that's awesome, you know. But that's also gets pretty expensive when we're kind of going outside and trying to figure out like, how does that fit in our regular pipeline of transportation and whatnot. So I think to answer the question, it's, you know, some of that stuff got DQ'd, but then also just kind of getting back to basics. But I mean, I could see something, you know, in the next couple of years that PAPS could bring out something. You know, I know there's, we have an innovation team. They are locked behind closed doors most of the time. I don't know anybody on the team, so no, I'm joking, but I can see something, you know, down the road.
Well, you guys, I know you're part of the heritage, so you might not be able to answer this, but you do have brands that get away from what we reference as lawnmower beers, you know, your adjunct lager, or light lager. You guys have, you know, part ownership or ownership of Not Your Father's. You guys do RTDs with Jack Daniels. And the one local that I want to see if you can help expand about, maybe give us a little bit of a lesson as you did with the Stroh's in Detroit, Dragon's Milk.
Yeah.
Out of New Holland. What do you guys do with Dragon's Milk? Is it, to our knowledge, it's just a distribution agreement.
Yes, that's correct. So we have no rights over any of the liquid or anything. Like, it's just distribution. Same thing with Jack Daniels. It's just basically putting the Jack Daniels Country Cocktail into our pipeline. And we're seeing huge growth of that F&B. I don't know what the logistics are behind the Not Your Father's root beer, but that was a rocket ship when I started in 2015. So, and that took off and crashed pretty hard. But that's kind of where we're at. It's more of, you know, throwing in the pipeline, getting these things kind of moving, because we have the distribution like team to make it happen, and these small companies don't. So Dragon's Milk is so good. Like, they're doing so much good stuff. It's one of my favorite, like, go-to winter beers.
And it's not just winter, all year round.
All year round.
All year round.
Every day's a stout day.
You can't drink that stuff down here. It's too hot, man.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you can. Are you a spirits fan by chance?
I am, yeah.
The New Holland spirits are easily some of the best spirits coming out of Michigan right now. Yeah. So if you've never had the spirits, next time you're in the area, definitely go grab a few bottles to take home. The gin is easily one of my favorite gins that's out there. But they have so many other styles. But you made a comment that really, like, in my head, it exploded and then it just tanked. And that was Not Your Father's. And not, it's not like it got bad, like the beer or root beer changed recipes or something. Within your marketing knowledge, strategy, all the things that you've done with Pabst, how does a brand get so hot and so cold so fast?
I mean, that was the craze of putting alcohol basically in a soda, you know, that was like, wait a minute, what? Yeah. And so I think just the general population just like grabbed onto it. It took it like a rocket ship, you know, and we put a whole team together, you know, to work off that brand. And just got to the point where it's just like, all of a sudden it was just like, okay, got here. And then it's just, it kind of leveled out, but it felt pretty hard. And you could look at like when the seltzer craze started, in my mind, when I was thinking, I was like, oh, it's going to be another, like, you know, hard soda thing. It's going to do the exact same thing. And it hasn't. So, and I'm not sure why that is, really, you know. I mean, everyone's still jumping in there. But I think I
feel like I can give you an answer for this, and this is just exactly what we've seen around here, plus personal experience. Lack of sugar and carbs. Yep. In a naturally health-minded world that we are in now, which is a little bit more.
Right.
Two, a lot easier to drink, less sweet. Great for activities that involve around camping, tubing, anything that's, you know, not necessarily drinking at a bar, things you would do, barbecuing. Yep. And three, I think it brought in the non-beer drinkers, non-soda drinkers, because the flavor isn't overpowering. It's like, I think Dan always says the phrase, like, drinking a lime, like, hard seltzer is like licking a TV and someone screaming the word lime in the other room.
Love it.
That's how you get it. But as Not Your Father's kind of came and went, and we were talking about how things aren't sweet, RTDs are now the thing. And those things are sweet as all hell.
I mean, I totally agree with all that. Like, that's where I was like, you know, the sweet is coming back. It's weird. It's like, it's kind of like creeping in again, you know, but you're right. That's why seltzers kept and keep going, because you have that health conscious. You're bringing the outside person that doesn't want to drink a beer, you know? So it's crazy how like that's keep going. And then now you see, you know, the sweet stuff coming back in, like what's a Cayman Jack, right? That stuff is on fire, you know, Twisted Tea, you know, stuff like that, where it's just like, what? And it's like, the calories are just like out of control, you know? So, I mean, hopefully we've kind of seen we saw a little bump with a Nachafaz root beer during the pandemic. I'm not sure exactly why, but it just kind of like bumped up. I'm like, what's going on here? You know?
Do you see, like, what are you guys referencing going back to what worked, going back to the older styles, the heritage brands, as you manage? Yeah. Do you foresee those sticking around, or do you foresee maybe another stab at a light version or a alternative version to some of these brands?
I see them sticking around. You know, I see us actually putting more time and effort and marketing dollars and kind of making these things kind of move a little more. I always say, you know, if you're not putting any, like, resources behind something, it's going to disappear, like a lot of the brands that are in our portfolio, you know, like the 96 brands we have, you know. So it's like, I could see them sticking around. I don't think the places like, you know, Baltimore, Detroit, Chicago, Stag and St. Louis area, you know, they don't want those to go away, you know. So just keeping them alive is super important, I think, for our company, but then also just for the fans. And I see Stroh's in more young people's hands than I never thought I would when I was in Detroit. You're just like, wow. Like, it's not everyone's like, well, it's an old man's beer, or older beer. It's like, no, this is the retro can. And I can see, you know, when PBR had its, you know, comeback in the early 2000s, you know, it was that, you know, messenger bicycle club out in Portland, just grabbing on and holding on to like make this thing kind of just lift, you know? So I could see, you know, especially what's happening in the world today, like these brands is kind of like mostly like a comfort, you know. It's like, oh yeah, my dad or my uncle or my brother used to drink this beer or whatever it is. And it's like, kind of feels like home, you know, a little bit. And we actually see some of these brands starting to pop up. Like, for instance, Old Style, we actually know the reason now, but for Indianapolis, it's kind of bumping right now. There's a couple bars there that are kind of Chicago themed, and it's just kind of like they want people that, you know, are moving down there, like maybe moving out of cities, going to like these three-tiered, like, you know, smaller cities. They're bringing their brands with them if they can, you know. So they'll come down to Indianapolis and bring Old Style and drink at the Chicago bars, but they're not in Chicago, you know. So which is really cool to see. So I think just trying to keep these guys alive is super important for us as a company. But then also, I think just for like our fans, you know, of these brands, they go deep. It's crazy how deep some of these brands go.
Well, you made a really valid point when we were discussing the craft beer, and you said that PBR is complementary to craft beer. Yeah. And when we say PBR, we mean the Royal Pabst brand. So we're talking Old Style, PBR, yeah. Stroh's, Natty Bow. Yeah. But for some reason, this is the beer that our grandparents had, which then our parents had because our grandparents had, which then we had because our parents had, and then our kids will have because we had. It's you guys are on a different level than your Bud Miller Coors. And it's a weird feeling because it's, you know, American adjunct lager. You would think it would fit into that category, but yeah, these brands really step aside to your Budweiser.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's why, as you said, the younger crowd is really getting into that brand. Is one, everyone loves retro, like everyone loves getting to that.
Totally.
But two, I think that it is a style of beer that's cost effective, but also, again, familiar with everyone. It's always in everyone's lexicon. It's always in social media, in media. I mean, when I think PBR, I think of Gran Torino. Like, it's just the first thing I think of. Do you, is that kind of what PAPS relies on, or what's your marketing strategy?
I mean, for the heritage brands I have is,
so yeah, your brands, I know you're not on PAPS. Yeah. I'm sorry. I keep bringing PAPS. We're all drinking PAPS.
It's fine. It's like, I mean, those guys, I mean, they have a whole team, of guys who work on that, and they're doing some absolutely brilliant things right now. And I love those guys, and they're just kind of like, I think PAPS in general, like the company, we used to listen to our consumer and just kind of like, hey, you know, like, we're not trying to be the next Super Bowl commercial or anything like that. It's like, let's like give the fans what they want, you know, and that just speaks to them. But then like that person talks to somebody, you know what I mean? But I think for the three brands I run, so Stag, Stroh's, Old Style, it's connecting these to the cities and places where they resonate. So for Old Style, for instance, like, yes, the beer is brewed in across Wisconsin. It is a Wisconsin beer. Sorry, Chicago people, but it is. But the Cubs, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but the baseball team in Chicago.
North Chicago.
Yeah, North Chicago. South Chicago, too. They actually have it down there quite a bit. But, you know, with the love of baseball in this brand on the north side and now also in the south side, it's crazy. Like, it is unreal, you know? So leaning into that one thing. Also, is like, what is also great about Chicago? The Chicago hot dog, you know, no ketchup, but like leaning into that. It's like, we did a partnership with Vienna Beef this year. Next year, we're hoping to go a little bigger on it. But it's like really just honing in on like why these brands resonate with these cities, but then connecting like-minded stuff with them. Also, hold on. You got the Jepsen Malort.
Oh, man.
For those of you listening to the podcast, you can obviously check out the video, youtube.com/betteron-draft. He brought out the Malort. I don't know why that is a thing.
Hey, you know what? It happened, and it is absolutely on fire. Like, absolutely crazy. So, like, we just launched the Chicago Handshake Passport. So you have to go to 15 bars and get your Chicago Handshake, and you get a collector's coin. Don't do all 15 in one day, please. Please space them out, two per day. Anyway, but yeah, like leaning into just stuff like that, you know what I mean? It's like, if it works, don't break it. You know, like in Detroit, it's like it's interesting because we were affiliated with the soccer team for a while there. And it's like, cool. Yeah. So we're still leaning into that. Even though we're not affiliated, we still have a partnership with them. The beer's still sold there. But also, like, you know, what else does Detroit have to offer to that connects the brand back to that city, and that kind of just like amplifies like what we're doing as a brand. And the same thing with Stag, St. Louis, Southern Illinois. We changed that packaging, and it was not good, you know, and now we're going back to a retro, it's gold can, and people are loving it again. But connecting the brands to the city is super important to me. And I think it just makes people just feel good. You know what I mean? It's got that retro. It's like, yeah, like they understand where I'm from or where I live or whatever it is. I'm not trying to push down, you know, something down someone's throat. It's like, no, it's like a lot of brands when they come to Texas are just like brewed in Texas, from the heart of Texas. And it's like Lone Star is from Texas. You know what I mean? So it's, yeah, back to the point, it's just, you know, connecting the brand to a place, a feeling, you know, other brands that are from that city or state is super important when it comes to marketing on my side.
Before we get into our final questions, you know, we've discussed a lot about the PAPS brands, but I want to know specifically from you, Adam, when you're not drinking a PAPSed branded beer, what is your go-to? What is your go-to style?
I'm a craft guy, man. Like there's a place down the street from me. It's called Roadmap Brewery. Small, I think they only got five barrel brew house. I probably go there a couple times a week. Great beer, great staff. My dog loves it. So yeah, I usually hit like a craft brewery, like when I'm doing stuff. If I'm at the pool, probably drinking some sort of cocktail or RTD or a seltzer. But yeah, I mean, I'm more of a, I love tap rooms. My dog grew up in the Pabst tap room in Wisconsin. And like, he loves just like, if I say you want to go to a brewery, he loses his mind. Like absolutely loses his mind. Hope he didn't hear that. No, he's just laying on the couch. But yeah, I'm a craft guy. I think it's, I never thought I would be, but once I started getting into craft beer when I was at the tap room in Milwaukee and understanding like different styles and why they're made with this. And I'm not like a brewer, but I understand like how to brew and I understand the styles. And John Kimes and Zach Krieger, the guys who did all the beer there. I mean, these guys are mad scientists. Like, I don't know what they're even doing down there, but I would say at the tap room, we were the first tap room probably in the country that had a seltzer on draft, and it was delicious.
All right. Well, as we end every show with the final questions, we are going to pass it off to Wendy. Wendy, what is your final question for Adam?
My final question. Let's talk about Stroh's again. What, as a, you know, Detroit-ish native, what do we see coming from them?
This year, just kind of like doing some activations and parties. We were already in town once doing some stuff. We're going to go back out again in September. So watch for that on our social media, Stroh's Beer, at Stroh's Beer. We also have some retro merch coming out from the packaging. And then I think just going into next year is, you know, you'll see some stuff with soccer themed. And I'm going to give you a little sneak peek, but if you ever hear of Alex the dog, he's coming back. So that's basically what we got going for Stroh's. I'm just happy we kind of like went back to that retro packaging. It's going really well, you know. Also, like, ask your bartender next time you're in, you know, ask for a draft beer, because the more we can do that, the more we get some buzz about having draft back.
Well, I'm steady till I die here, so I'm super happy to hear that. Awesome. Tito, what you got?
So, Ken kind of asked a question. I didn't quite hear the answer, but I'm going to come back to it. As you know, sounds like you travel around the country quite a bit, but as you go to these craft breweries, you say you're a craft guy. I'm going to ask again, what is a particular style that you gravitate towards?
Man, what time of day is it?
It is a Midwestern August.
Midwestern August. Okay.
Oh man, Midwestern August. Like, I'll probably ask if you have the Oktoberfest on draft yet.
There you go.
If you don't, it's gotta be soon, right? So yep. I always love how Oktoberfest is September, but it's whatever, you know. It's so crazy how like in the tap room, like, of course, as soon as August hits, like, you have Oktoberfest yet? Like, come on, man. It's not quite, it's in the brew kettle, you know? Like, we just brewed it yesterday. It's like, give it a couple days. Or I mean, if it's winter, I love a nice stout or like a smoky stout. Summer, Mexican lager or like a, we were doing a bunch of fruited sours, like kettle sours, and they were so good. Yeah, I'm kind of all over the board. If you ask any of my staff when I first got there, I was on a kick of drinking the triple, and it wasn't the smartest thing, but so I did that later at night, you know.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yep. All right. So word to the wise, next time you're in Detroit, head up to the city of Warren. If you do love a Belgian triple, Final Absolution out of Dragon Mead is easily one of the best triples in the world.
Awesome.
I will stand by that statement every single day of the week. So yeah, Final Absolution, Dragon Mead, which is in Warren, about 15 minutes from Detroit, if that. Just because it's at the north end of the city. My final question, we are going to, I know you're not a PBR guy, but I have to ask this question, because PBR went big. You guys, as a brand, Pabst sold a 99 pack can or pack, giant ass, like long thing. Yep. And then earlier this year, you unveiled the 1844 pack.
Yep.
One, is that a real thing? Two, I did the math and it should weigh 1,438 pounds. So part three, did you just put cardboard around a pallet?
Wow, that's a lot of questions there.
Maybe it should be yes and no's. So.
It would be, it was a real thing. It happened.
Okay.
I mean, it was a, what, 1844?
Yeah.
That's how many beers there were.
Yeah, 1,438 pounds is the weight.
Yeah. I mean, you could buy it for $1,000, I think it was, or $900. But yeah, we kind of, it was definitely one of those things, like more of a display enhancer. Like, you know, let's get some buzz. It did get picked up by most of the media. And then the year before we did that, it was
1,700 type. There was a number, but it was 1,700. Yeah. Did anybody buy it?
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, I don't know, actually.
Okay.
But people definitely bought the 99 pack, man. Like, I actually saw, I keep seeing it the other day. There's two guys, don't do this, by the way, but there's two guys on a motorcycle. Two motorcycles, and they had it like between like them, like riding down the highway, and I was like, oh my god, this is not good.
I mean, it's not you probably breaking a law, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, not me. But yeah, the 99 pack was great. The only thing is, like, people don't know is we had to build those. Like, that was just the box, so we had to put 99 beers in those, like the distributor or sales rep or whatever. So it turned into a kind of a logistics kind of nightmare when they started going crazy. It's like, well, we only have like 10 of them, you know, like, and they're out throughout. So
that is going to do it. You mentioned you manage a lot of the socials. Where can they see your work?
Yeah. So, Old Style, Stroh's and Stag, I manage all those. Reach out if you have any questions about any of the brands. I'm on it probably way too much. But yeah, it's super fun. I dig it. If you tag us, I will share it, guaranteed. Which is, I think people dig that now. You know, it used to be like all about the photos, and now it's all about the stories, right? So I'm not on TikTok. I don't even have the app on my phone. I kind of am refusing to be on that world. Plus, as a
beer, you'll get sucked in.
Yeah, as a beer company, we can't advertise on there because there's no way of really like honing out the underage people, which I totally get. But yeah, just follow us there. Or we also have merchandise on Stroh's, beer.com, Stag, and Old Style. We are always putting out some fun things, so keep your eyes out for that. We got the Malort Chicago Handshake merch that launched for Old Style. We got some retro stuff for Stroh's and Stag. So keep an eye on there, and there's always some cool, fun wearables.
You might want to relook into TikTok, just because there are plenty of large brands out there, like Toppling Goliath, Nevada Brew Works is another one I follow. So there are some alcohol related brands on TikTok that are businesses, like breweries like yours. So
yeah.
I don't know what you can do, but maybe there's something new or something changed as things change. Michael Wilcox in the chat wants to know if there's going to be a PBR chai latte.
No.
No.
Not that, well, I know.
That's going to do it for the Better on Draft podcast, episode 296. We're almost at 300, folks. We're going to have a huge 300th birthday party, 7th anniversary party. We've been doing this for a long time. If you're interested, email us, betterondraft@gmail.com. We're going to be hosting it out in Oakland County. If you'd like to join us, please feel free to email us. We'd love to have you. That's going to do it. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.